This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
Hurry, Falcor! The Nothings everywhere!
Don't worry. We'll reach the boundaries of Fantasia.
Do you know where they are?
I have no idea.
Then how do we find a human child?
With luck.
Faster, Falcor, faster! We have to hurry!
All right, hang on tight!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. It is Tuesday, which means, of course, that we are throwing back in time. We've been pretty set in the 80s recently, and we're back to 1984 and Wolfgang Petersen's The Neverending Story.
I was a little bit afraid to actually revisit this one because of how attached I was to The Neverending Story growing up. I watched it over and over and over every time it came out on TV. So I was a bit scared that I might rewatch it and find out that it had not aged well. I'm glad to report that I didn't have that experience. I loved rewatching this so much.
So I have a memory of a feeling that's attached to this movie, but I have no memories of this movie whatsoever. Like, I completely forgot every scene, every character, the storyline, no idea. But I know how the movie made me feel. And when I watched it for the second time, which was, what, after 27 years, 26 years easily, it made me feel the same way. So the nostalgia is there. I remember the song word for word. I used to sing it a lot around the house. But other than that, I forgot this. Someone named Atreyu. I forgot whoever was involved in it. I forgot what journey he was going on.
Did you forget Falcor?
I didn't forget Falcor. Okay. But I always thought, so in my mind, I thought that Bastian, who's the kid who's reading the book, I thought he gets sucked into the book in the beginning. And I thought he goes on the adventure. So yeah, just like revisiting this was like rediscovering Neverending Story for the first time, which was kind of like the best weekend gift I could have ever asked for.
I'm so glad we're laying out our stakes right at the start, because I am going to be the Indiana Jones Sharmila Ganesan of the group, which is to say that I didn't like it at all. I have no attachment to it from childhood, except that I'm going to be this person. Ah, I am my least favorite internet person on the show today. Listen, guys, I read the book.
I never read the book.
Okay, so my attachment to it comes very much from the novel by Michael Ende. And so my understanding of the story, everything that goes into it, I know the song, but I only know the song because 80s kids won't stop singing the song. And other than that, I know the story from the book. So this is my first time watching the film. And I have thoughts, but we can get to that. I didn't enjoy it as much. I wish I did. So the Neverending Story essentially tells a tale, a kind of existential tale, right? It starts off as being about this boy, Bastian Bucks, who is kind of estranged from his dad, who's being bullied at school or bullied on the streets, really. And while escaping his bullies, kind of finds himself in an antique bookshop where he encounters a bookseller who introduces him to this novel, The Neverending Story. And while he reads it, he gets carried away and is brought along on this journey to save the land of Fantasia, which is at peril from something called the Nothing.
From something called the Nothing, yes.
I don't know how else to put it. And then he meets Atreyu and Falcor.
So I think what I loved about this film as a kid, and I realize that so keenly now, is that it so played into my book nerd life, right? It's a movie about a kid who loves books. It's also about the magic of books, the magic of reading, the magic of going on an adventure with the characters in the books you read. And that's something this film does really, really well. The way they intersperse between Bastian, who's reading what's happening in Fantasia, to the characters in the film and the things that are happening. There's a lot of true childhood joy and excitement portrayed that I really loved. And like you, Arvind, I had forgotten that he isn't actually in the adventure for much of the story.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually literally just reading it, which I felt like is a very refreshing thing to watch on screen, that your hero, quote unquote, isn't actually the one technically in the thick of the action. It felt very innovative, even by today's standards.
Yeah, and I think there are a bunch of 80s movies that do that, right? I don't know why. It's always like, was it just a dream, or was it someone's fantasy, or was this just like in someone's head, or, you know, something that someone was thinking about? I mean, now when you think about it, you kind of hope that it wasn't all a dream, that everything in the book was actually real, and, you know, this guy owns like a magic bookstore, and he did actually give him like a magical book. But also watching it, it's like, it's all about imagination, and that's fun, right? I want to talk about the jankiness in the movie, though, because the movie has a lot of like puppetry and practical effects. When we did the review for Superman, we said that the effects didn't age well. I feel like there are two kinds of jankiness. One that looks terrible and makes me like super grateful that CGI exists, and that's Superman. And then there's jankiness like this that makes me go like, it belongs in the film. It's very Jim Henson-esque and very Muppets, and I'm glad that it aged the way it did, even though a lot of it doesn't actually look good.
So I thought stuff looked really good in that janky way.
Yeah, exactly.
There's
a
character called Rockbiter who looks like boulders have come to life. It's so beautiful. I loved looking at him on screen. And Falco, he was exactly what I remembered him being as a kid. You know, there's a scene where Atreyu is sort of lying against Falco and you see the iridescent scales and they look like you could touch them. And that's what CGI can't do.
I agree, sure. I mean, I think intellectually, I understand the appeal of the movie. It's very 80s. It's got all the stuff that we've been talking about these 80s kids movies in particular. And I think the idea of appealing to childhood imagination, of creating things in your own mind, you know, of being able to empower kids to create their own worlds. I love all of that. I just wish that I wasn't watching the film. Oh my God.
You're breaking so many hearts at the moment.
I'm so sorry. I think that I tapped out on the trippy kid beautiful puppetry thing with Labyrinth. I think Labyrinth was the thing for me that went like, see, the 80s wasn't all bad and you can love it. And I was like, yeah, I'm into this. And then watching The NeverEnding Story, I was like, oh, no lah, it's okay. Thank you. And the thing is, I understand. I really do get the heartbreak and all that, but I could not get into the story. The going back and forth between the two boys, between Bastion and Atreyu, it's meant to draw the parallels, right? It's meant to talk about how heroism looks different and, you know, kind of transposing yourself into that world. But I found it disjointed. I didn't like the performances. I thought everybody was really shrill. And so I think overall for me, it was hard to get invested in the story, particularly because I think I also know how it's going to end, or rather I know where it's going to go. And so I just didn't have that investment, and that made it difficult for me to engage.
So the acting was tough for me because it is
Atreyu's constantly screaming.
Atreyu is not great, and I don't remember that. So that was one of the things I was like, oh, I used to really like Atreyu as a kid. Mm-hmm. Now he's like one of those semi-bad 80s kid actors.
Yep.
He's best when he's riding the horse.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
This is true. When he doesn't have to emote, he's fine.
Which doesn't last long.
No. Bastion I liked. And then the childlike empress I loved. Mm. So it kind of ranges in this weird like way of that era of child acting. I agree. I wasn't a huge fan of the acting. I love the voice acting. So all of the puppetry and all of that worked really well. But at least on that point, I agree.
Lynn, that scene in Stranger Things when they start singing the NeverEnding Story song, was that the worst scene in the history of film for you or TV shows? Because it's like peak 80s. It's Stranger Things, it's 80s nostalgia, and then they're singing NeverEnding Story.
You know what the problem is here? The problem is the void. I am the nothing, all right? I acknowledge that. Like
the despair and the destroyer of hopes and dreams.
When I watch the NeverEnding Story, or for that matter, Stranger Things, where I also feel the disconnect. I think the problem, nostalgia is a double-edged sword at the best of times, right? As as we found out last week, even if you return to something that you loved as a kid, nostalgia could have inflated it beyond all reason, and then you come back and it's like, oh, this is not what I thought it was. On the other hand, you also have where everybody tells you from their own love and nostalgia how great this thing is, and then you go in and watch it and you're like, I feel nothing. And that's how I felt about the Stranger Things scene as well. I was like, I feel nothing. I know I'm supposed to connect, but I don't. And then the less I connect, the more I dislike.
I don't know. I honestly cannot separate whether I would like it as much if I watched it for the first time today.
Mm.
That's the thing with Neverending Story. Like, because so much of nostalgia is like layers. And I think it often prevents you from being clear, right? Like, yes, I can tell there are things that don't work, but it's overwhelmingly for me, like, oh my God, like that's what they're trying to say. And I can't separate it.
Yeah, I liked it so much that I almost wanted to check out the sequels, and then I stopped myself because I saw the...
Oh, I'm 100% going to watch Neverending Story 2 because
God.
I remember liking it even more than the first one.
Oh.
Plus, it had Jonathan Brandis, who I was deeply in love with at one time. Neverending Story 3 isn't very good.
So I think I'm going to stop myself at one and just savor this.
If you guys watch it, excited to hear the reports. I want to say that I'm really happy that you both found happiness in it, because I think that that's the essence of childhood watching and childhood revisiting. I just, as an adult woman watching this, I find it hard to appreciate. But we're talking today about The Neverending Story, which came out in 1984, directed by Wolfgang Petersen, who would go on to do Air Force One. Just saying,
wow.
You know, while we're talking about this. We want to know, did you watch it when it first came out? Have you seen it? Are you planning to revisit it? You can let us know. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. And of course, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bia Fakiran Malayang. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvind. Today, we're throwing it back to 1984 and The Neverending Story. So we've been talking about our differing feelings about it. I wanted to talk about the music because it's such a famous song. I think the sound of the film is also very iconic, and that I really did enjoy.
Well, the song is... I mean, I can't separate it from how much I love the movie, right? But I didn't realize, and again, this is one of those weird 80s things, how nobody would score a fantasy film that way now. You know, the weird synth sounds in like horse riding scenes, or the weird sort of techno undertones to some of the music in the film. It was kind of weird, but I was feeling it, and it fit the mood of what they're trying to do as well. I think the 80s was a wild time of experimentation.
No, the song is just iconic. It's so good. I love the song. My only, like, I was kind of bummed that the song doesn't show up in the film. That's my only thing. I wish that at some point they would have played the actual song, you know, just to in an epic moment, or some sort of like when he's fighting something evil or something like that. Never happens. It shows up in the beginning and then it shows up at the end, and that's about it. So that's my one gripe.
I don't really know where the song would fit in the film, though.
Oh, I don't care.
Falco's theme.
Yeah, yeah.
I also wanted to bring up the fact that, so I mentioned Wolfgang Petersen, right? And this was a very, very European film. In fact, in response to some of the criticism that came its way, I am in the minority. I should say that, you know, critically, there were also people who didn't like it at the time, who have not liked it since. But generally speaking, it was really well received. In response, however, to some of the criticism, Wolfgang Petersen, the German director, did say, oh, you know, it's about the Euro sensibilities. American audiences weren't ready for the European sensibilities. And I did want to bring that up simply because I think even if you didn't know that it wasn't a straight Hollywood production, you would figure that out pretty soon, because there is something about the pace of it. There's something about also the essential darkness at the heart of the story, which is really about existentialism. I mean, when we say that he's battling the nothing, it really is the nothing. It's this thing that comes up and swallows their world and leaves it with with nothing, nothing behind. There are things called the swamps of sadness, you know? And I do think that that is quite, I wouldn't say adult, but very much, it has a sort of less saccharine sensibility than what you would associate with America, particularly from that period.
I didn't expect that it would be as dark as parts of this movie turned out to be. Once again, I think it's me remembering things as a child, right? So some of that caught me unawares. It was really dark, dark in a way that even as an adult, it got to me in certain parts of watching it during a pandemic on top of that. But, you know, there are things that happen. There are themes that they talk about that feel very deep. It feels very existential. That's a great word. And yes, decidedly not the American child film approach.
Yeah. I also completely forgot what the NeverEnding Story meant. So when they finally reveal it, it's very smart. It's like, it's very smart how they incorporate the name into the film and stuff. I was also surprised that at watching the film, I realized how many other things it went on to influence. So video games like God of War, I realized were like heavily inspired by NeverEnding Story, like just the quest nature of it, the video game nature of it, the puzzle solving, you know, when he gets to the Sphinx. All of that is like it reminded me of God of War a lot.
The warriors even look the same.
The warriors even look the same. And also that scene in The Last Jedi when she's looking in the mirror and then she has to figure out, Rey has to figure out who she is. That whole mirror scene is like, is taken straight out of NeverEnding Story.
Is that so?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Oh, that's a great scene though.
Yeah, it's a great scene. And even the aesthetics and all are the same. So I think like just watching it, it was fun to see like how many new things you get to connect to NeverEnding Story and how it influenced it either directly or indirectly.
Again, so happy for the both of you. I really am. I wish I could get there, but I simply can't. I think I was more interested in this as an exploration of other people's nostalgia, as participating in something that I know to be such a huge deal for all the reasons that we've been talking about, because people know the song, because the scenes make their way into other films, because the cries of Atreyu, Falkor, have become this sort of call and response thing across pop culture. I get all that. I was going to say maybe I need to rewatch, but I know in my heart of hearts it would be a lie.
So you know what I am really curious about and what I think I'd like to do is to get a kid from today to watch it and see how they respond and how they feel.
I think they'd hate it.
So I think it really depends on the age. Because I think, yes, on the one hand, kids have been sort of spoiled in some ways with the level of CGI and the quality of things that we get on screen now. But on the other hand, I wonder whether that's exactly what would make something like this a complete novelty.
I just feel because the movie is not loud, like even though the theme and the whole quest is supposed to be big and it's like a bonkers theme. But then it has a one piece vibe to it. Like the entire movie feels like one tonally consistent piece. And I don't know how else to put it. I don't know if that resonates with kids today, especially if you see the Pixar stuff and the DreamWorks stuff and all the content that comes out, that super high energy. I don't know. I don't know if they would relate as much. Also wanted to ask you guys, do you like Falkor's voice? Because I forgot that he spoke. I thought he was a flying dog before he actually showed up. And then he's a luck dragon. I completely forgot that he sounds like a wise Gandalf type of character until he started talking. And I was like, what is happening?
I love every single thing about Falkor. So that obviously includes his voice.
I did love Falkor because I think it was a welcome note of... Well, firstly, in terms of voice, it was just nice to hear a lower voice because otherwise for the rest of the film, it is a lot of shrieking. But the other thing is, you know, the thing about children's movies is that there is a balance to be struck, right? Where the kid watching the movie is transported and the adult watching the movie for the 556th time is also still able to find something in it. And I think if you don't have Falkor, it's a little bit hard as a neutral adult to get latched into the movie because, so I was grateful for Falkor. Definitely grateful he spoke.
And I think that, it's not without reason that Falkor is probably one of the most iconic things about that film because he represents everything that I think is fun and beautiful and sort of that imaginative joy of these kinds of films, the fantasy films. And as far as realizing that on screen, especially back at that time, I think he's you know, a huge achievement.
Do you think they should remake this? Because I was
thinking... I think there are plans.
There were plans, yeah. Right? I read something. And this is one of the few times when I'm like, maybe they could. Because with today's technology, I think if it's done right, they could make like a huge epic out of the NeverEnding Story.
I'd actually be on board for that, but not if they went down the NeverEnding Story 3 route.
Mm. The author of NeverEnding Story was initially happy, right, that the movie was being adapted, and then eventually called it, and I quote, a gigantic melodrama of kitsch, commerce, plush and plastic. And so wow. I think it sounds even better in German. I think that for me, as somebody whose love and nostalgia is attached to the book and not the film, I would like to see a more faithful adaptation of the themes of the book, while I think keeping some of that spirit of the film that you both love, right? I guess since there's a second go at it, I don't know if the author would ever be happy, really. I can't speak for him, but I would like to see an adaptation that hews more closely to the book than a remake, I think.
I think I'd just like to make sure that they keep to that childlike love of books and reading that this movie does well. Mm. Because my fear with a remake in today's world is that it would become a Lord of the Rings level endeavor.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily want that. Because that's what also happened with the Narnia books. It started off as it had that childlike enthusiasm and magic and love, but then it became epic. And there's a balance to be struck.
I wanted to say, though, that in the beginning in the bookstore where he tells him to go run off to some video game arcade and, you know, look at his like beeping devices or whatever. I'm like, he would hate the way we are watching this movie today. Like the amount of technology that we had to use to even watch this movie, like different devices that are beside us and in our pockets, that bookstore owner would like...
He would think we were the nothings.
Yeah, he would throw that book at us and like chase us out of the store. I'm just saying.
He would recognize me for what I am, I say. We are talking today about The NeverEnding Story, the first installment of a three-part series from 1984. Which camp do you fall into? Would you like to hit me with rocks? That's fine as well. Let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.